In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today we're here on our long coronavirus lock-in day. This is the second one we're doing for the day.
Episode 2.
We're going to talk a little bit more serious. Last time we did some fun Adam Sandler stuff, some movies for you to watch, some things. Here we're going to go a little more serious.
Okay.
Because we're going to talk about kind of a serious issue. And right now, of course, in the world, we're dealing with serious issues with the coronavirus thing, with the lockdown.
Yeah.
Or, well, with the shelter in place. Not lockdown, but shelter in place. That's a serious issue. But there's another serious issue that's been building in awareness over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Last couple decades, actually.
Okay.
It's been building in awareness, building in people's understandings. You're seeing it depicted more in media, in TV shows, films, things like this, and maybe even closer to appropriate depictions of this.
Yeah.
And this is a subject that I've wanted to talk about since we started the podcast because it has personal meaning to me.
Okay.
People who know me will know the personal meaning. I don't know if I'm ready quite yet to share it on the podcast what the personal meaning is.
That's understandable.
But a lot of the people that listen already have talked to me and know enough what the reason is.
Yeah, just...
But what I want to talk about today is autism.
Okay.
And, I mean, you can recognize probably if you look back to when you were a kid going to school,
mm-hmm.
there were some kids that would at that time have been called the disabled kids. Because that was the appropriate term at the time.
Yeah, they would be disabled kids or... I mean, they wouldn't really... Well, there was disabled, there was... Special up to a point became a bit of a crude
way of joke of describing it. And even back then, even back when we were going to school, I'm going to use the word because it was used at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not appropriate to use anymore.
No.
But retard was also used still at the time we were going to school.
Yeah. Well,
even by teachers and staff of schools.
Well, the term retarded specifically, I was actually a little bit of a confession on my part, not necessarily a confession, but a bit of information that I may not have shared with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
My kindergarten teacher assumed that I was potentially retarded.
Okay.
And wanted to hold me back a grade because I sat cross-legged in my seat.
Oh, okay.
So which is funny because my mom sat cross-legged in her chair, and I still sit cross-legged.
Well, yeah. If it helps, and you said that was kindergarten?
Kindergarten.
Dude, bro.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to let me pass kindergarten.
Really?
Because I couldn't walk on a balance beam with an egg and a spoon. I didn't have good enough balance to do that, so they didn't want me to pass.
What the hell kind of a test is that?
This was the 80s. Apparently, they were worried about that.
People are stupid. Yeah. What the hell? I didn't know that was a thing.
That was a reason they thought that I wasn't ready to move out of kindergarten, because my balance wasn't good enough.
Your balance? What does your balance have to do with your intelligence?
I have no idea.
Stephen Hawking was one of the greatest minds on the planet. Dude couldn't even move his neck.
I mean, he couldn't move at all at one point. I mean, for the majority of his life.
That's all I'm saying. Your physical capabilities have nothing to do with your intelligence.
I get that. I mean...
That's all I'm saying.
I know, but...
Either way, yeah, it was assumed that she had assumed...
Because of you sitting that way.
Yeah, because the way I sat in my chair.
Weird.
And because I had attention span issues. Early on, they were lined out. And it turns out that, now this is not necessarily specifically tied to that, but it was turned out that, I think I've said it on the podcast before, that I have been diagnosed with adult ADHD, which makes perfect sense.
Hey, Mike, squirrel.
Where?
Exactly.
But
that would make sense for the time period and the fact that they weren't looking into that in that way. And in fact, back when we went to school, autism wasn't being looked at in the same way.
Right.
There were very strict guidelines for what they considered to be an autistic individual, and most people didn't have much experience or knowledge. They just kind of fell under the blanket of mental retardation, and there wasn't really a lot of work done on to how encompassing autism was. In fact, if you think back from your childhood, think back of the early movie depictions of autism, most people go automatically to Rain Man and Dustin Hoffman's performance in Rain Man.
Savant.
And I want to make something very, very clear. Autism does not equal savant abilities. Savants are people who are just super intelligent anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to appear as regularly as it does in the autistic community as it does in the normal community,
mm-hmm.
in that you have these people who are just completely brilliant geniuses.
Right.
Autistic people that are savants have a little bit better ability to focus on the things that they are kind of connected to that they do so well.
Yeah.
Because of the way that their brain processes information.
Right.
And this is part of what I want to get into talking about. There's a lot of confusion about autism. There's a lot of things that people don't understand about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ways that in the past it was very heavily misdiagnosed. And then there are a lot of myths about what causes autism.
Okay.
And I just kind of wanted to give people some little bit of education. Now, again, this is something that I have a lot of personal experience with and a lot of personal connection to.
Right.
And this is why I've done a lot of research on this. I've also, again, had years of experience working with individuals that are autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And it has taught me a lot more about the condition that you really – it's hard not to have the knowledge without actually spending time with people.
Yeah.
And seeing that it is so much more of an open – it's an open thing as opposed to just kind of a closed diagnosis that many people think it is. Most people think that it has to do with a few basic characteristics. Let me bring up what I found doing some research in prep for this podcast, specific things to say to make it sound a little bit more professional than what my rambling might say. To give you kind of a rough definition, autism is best described as a neurological developmental disorder. So neurological,
yep.
Developmental, characterized typically by difficulties with social communication and interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Sensory processing issues, and restrictive and repetitive behaviors. This is actually a really good definition that's all-encompassing,
okay.
But also gives the ability for all the gray area that really happens within autism.
Yeah, because that's a broad definition.
It is broad, but it also, it hits everything, but it gives you so much interpretation as to what could fall under autism. Now, autism is considered now what's called a spectrum disorder, in that it doesn't just present in one way.
Broad
it has
gray
a,
area.
It has
that
a broad
sense.
Range
yep.
of how it presents to people. And I, again, some of the individuals that I've worked with autism, you see so many differences in the way so many things are handled, but there are some of these basic components. One of the basic components, we'll start with these ones that I listed here. First of all, I went over a little bit. Neurological means it's something in the brain.
Right.
Something with the brain, with the nerves.
Right.
Developmental disorder. Most of the times when you see signs of autism, they come out during the first 3 years of a child's life.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is the child stops reaching certain developmental milestones. So you haven't had a kid yet. I have a few. When babies are born, obviously they can't really move.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, they have grip strength.
Mm-hmm.
To where in the first week of life, their grip strength could actually hold them up. If they grab onto something,
mm-hmm.
it could hold them up from falling. You wouldn't even have to hold them.
Wow.
They can grab on tight enough. That's a throwback to supposedly an evolutionary throwback to when we were more primitive as primates.
I was going
to
say primates, yeah. Apes. Apes are like that.
Yeah. So, but babies don't move around. They don't talk, obviously.
Right.
Those things start happening throughout the first year of life. They start to wiggle around, roll themselves over, crawl.
Of them learn how to walk early.
Make sounds, mm-hmm. To mimic your sounds.
Yep.
Eventually start getting to the point of talking, you know, mama, dada, poo-poo.
Yep.
You know, disestablishmentarianism, that kind of thing. That was my first word, by the way. Just so you know.
Bullshit.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I have no idea what my first word was. But anyway. Point being, I will get you a recording, by the way, of somebody saying disestablishmentarianism. That's freaking hilarious. It's one of my favorite things ever. Somebody who's not able to say the word, but it's just so it's a kid trying to say it. So adorable, so cute.
Okay.
But anyway, all these things are the milestones that kids reach, and there's certain age groups when they should reach these milestones. By about a year old,
mm-hmm.
anywhere from 10 months to 14 months is mm-hmm. when a kid should start walking. Those are the kinds of
those are the kinds of
milestone things.
The general
they give you a group of ages as to when this could happen. It could happen a little earlier, could happen a little later. So if your kid's not walking at one, but they're making at least they're in the cruiser stage where they're holding onto a couch
yeah.
and walking along the couch, but not mm-hmm. walking independent of it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's happening at one, your kid is still not completely walking. You don't necessarily have to worry. You don't have to freak out and go get a doctor.
Yeah,
they give you an age range of which that's supposed to happen. But around the ages of one or two, you start seeing that kids that present with autism don't reach all these milestones. They start showing specific behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the more common behaviors are not making eye contact regularly with people.
Okay.
Not developing proper speech patterns.
Right.
And then super repetitive behaviors that should have by that toddler age disappeared. Hand flapping is a really common one. Rocking back and forth in the same place over and over again and not stopping. Normally a kid will rock back and forth for a minute and be fine. They stop. Or they'll do a hand flapping thing real quick and stop. When they're continually doing those things over and over again,
right?
Those are signs. And what those signs actually have kind of a specific purpose for the autistic individual.
Right.
For many of them, that's when we get into kind of this some of these other parts of it. Sensory processing issues become one of the main things that they're dealing with. And the averted gaze, not looking directly in the eye of somebody they're talking to, the repetitive motions, hand flapping, that kind of stuff, repetitive behaviors, these all fall into their sensory processing. Most of the research now that has gone into autism has shown that during this time where these neural pathways would be being built in the early child to learn these capabilities of talking, of walking, of doing all these things, the infant brain has the ability for all these neural pathways, but they haven't built themselves yet because they're learning these things.
Right.
In fact, it's theorized that around the age of 27, we stop building as many neural pathways. So between birth and 27, that's when we got to get as much of the knowledge in as we can because it's harder to build the pathways after that.
Oh,
they
wow.
still get built, but it's harder to do.
So the brain information needs to be repeated more often.
The brain isn't as plastic after the age of 27.
Wow.
But in these early, early years, as these neural pathways are developing, in the autistic individual, the current prevalent theory now is that these pathways just don't build in the right way.
Wow.
And so a lot of their sensory input issues are a result of these pathways not being built properly. And so they're not processing incoming sound to process it back out properly. They're not processing what they feel and with their hands or within the environment, how movement makes them feel properly. I wouldn't say properly, but in what we would normally consider an ordinary fashion. And this may be the result of why they have the sensory issues that they have.
Okay, so let me try to wrap my head around this because I think I hit it. So this obviously, and it would make sense that this is obviously some form of a developmental disorder.
Yeah,
but it is a physical one that exists within the brain and it stops.
Theorized that that's
a theory. Okay,
that's theorized.
They look at brainwave activity.
The thing is with it, with autism, this is one of the kind of misconceptions and issues about autism today.
Okay,
is while this is a theory, the brain activity, and this kind of shows through with all of the things that you see, the sensory issues, the speech and communication problems, the repetitive and restrictive behaviors that they have, all of this falls right into brain pathways not going correctly. But it's still a theory, and this is they have no proof as to what exactly physically happens.
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, they have no proof as to what exactly is the physical cause of autism. And I'm going to get into that in just a minute.
Right.
But that's the prevalent theory at this point, is that during these developmental times there's many prevalent theories that during these developmental times, these pathways aren't built in the same way. The brain is wired differently, basically.
That would make sense than what we ordinarily think of a
brain being wired.
Now, I'm going to ask something based on some information that I have collected.
Okay, go ahead.
And I'm curious what
I'll do what I can for an answer.
I'm curious what your clarity would be on this. So, one of the theories behind autism is that the brain is seeing, or the body, the brain is taking in information, but it doesn't know how to compute it.
Or
communicate it.
That is one of the theories of what's going on within the, especially when you're dealing with the sensory processing issues.
Right.
The brain is getting the sensory information from the ear, from the eyes,
right,
from the ears, from the skin, from the mouth. All of these five senses that we tout so big, even though we have many more than just the five.
Yes.
The five senses that we tout so big, this sensory information is coming in. And because of the wiring, because of the way that those neurons and whatnot have connected within the brain.
Yeah.
Yes, the theory is that they're not processing it in a way that what would be considered quote unquote normal processing of it.
Okay, so if I may, because obviously that would create episodes in these people right? In those that are autistic. Yeah. I am sorry. You're explaining this to me and the wheels are turning very early on for me as far as trying to understand and interpret what's going on. So if I may throw something out there. One of the things that I've heard is that autism is an overload of sensory input without the capability to communicate an output or explain what you're feeling.
For some autistic individuals, yes, that is the issue.
So would I understand this is with some, and I understand that from everything you've explained so far, that the idea of autism or not idea, it exists. Yeah. The theories that exist within autism is or the spectrum that exists is obviously different. Things are experienced differently. Things are communicated differently. So on and so forth. And there are certain characteristics. You're blowing my mind right now with some of the patterns and the recognizable attributes that come with autism. But one of the things that I'm curious about is these episodes are just
when an autistic individual has a behavior episode,
either a behavioral episode or something of the like. It could, from what you're telling me, these characteristics that happen. I do apologize for stuttering over myself. I'm really like trying to process this properly.
It's okay.
And actually I'm really trying to vocalize this properly.
Take the time that you need to.
So I'm actually really fascinated because it sounds to me very much like it may be the case that the information is being taken in and it is being recognized by the individual.
But they are
incapable of interpreting and processing it.
Sometimes that would be the case.
So they see or they taste or they feel or they hear or they what have you, and they know it exists, but they don't know either what it means or how it operates, or they cannot communicate what they interpret from it. And that's where you see things like the characteristics such as the hands moving, the rocking back and forth. It's an overload. It's a sensory overload.
It is. It is. I mean,
and an inability to process or organize the information.
It's if you can imagine the things that have been brought up as tortures used at Guantanamo Bay, for instance, where they play super loud music and don't let the prisoners' clothes, play super loud music, don't let them lay down and go to sleep.
Right.
Trying to communicate with them in a language that they don't understand.
Right.
And just bombarding them with light on all the time so it can never be dark for them.
Right.
That kind of that's considered torture.
That's daily life, it sounds like.
That could be. It could be for many autistic individuals. That could be the sensory input that they're getting from daily life.
Dude, that's insane. Like,
the desire for some of them to be reclusive and not want to be involved in anything because so much of it is just so much input at one time. That's not for every single case.
Yeah,
I would say that is part of the problem to the degree with almost every single one.
Yeah,
but not to some degree, but not necessarily to the full degree of it.
So it depends on how far this lack of.
It depends on how far
potentially
in the
speaking,
spectrum.
Theoretically speaking, it depends on how far into the spectrum you are. So it has to do with how much of a lack of neurons that you have.
Yeah, because I mean, one individual
that are developed to process this information.
One individual I've worked with regularly. With him, you can talk to him, explain things to him, and he will still get mentally stuck on certain things.
Okay.
Certain stuff he will be very stuck on and won't be able to move away from, won't be able to process through.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens with me.
Specifically when it comes to...
I don't think he's talking about me. But.
No. Specifically when it comes to dates and times that things are supposed to happen. If he doesn't have a calendar to reference back to check the dates and times and point that out. And sometimes he'll have to point it out 5 or 6 times a day that this is happening on this specific day, even though it's 3 weeks in the future, because his mind can't get off of that singular point of that issue. Yet in other things, he can communicate fairly well. You could sit down and have a little bit of a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
He has a little bit of a speech impediment, so you have to understand him.
Yeah.
But with this individual, he presents one way. With another individual I've worked with, the concept of things happening at any point in time in the future is almost non-existent. Just doesn't even conceptualize that.
Later becomes why not now?
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
Or repetition of the words later, thinking that you're wanting them to repeat the words, not necessarily understanding the concept that there is something more than what's happening right at this moment.
Wow.
And the thing is, you don't know if there's more happening in there because, again, the lack of ability to communicate what's going on in the brain is there. We don't necessarily always know what they are understanding and what they are getting, because sometimes they don't have the ability to show us what they are or not. It'd be wrong to assume that they don't get it because they're not showing us anything. It sounds like they are,
but one of them is having, if I may, between the two individuals, one of them has a tether and another does not. The tether is the calendar. The tether is, I'm verifying by this information that this is what we're talking about. Whereas the other one does not have a concept
I can say both have the availability of the exact same calendar.
Right, and but yeah, one processes it as a tether. Yeah. One connects to it as a tether and the other one does not.
And so, but it presents itself in many different ways, mm-hmm. but people see it as only somebody who can't interact and talk with you.
Right.
Won't look at you.
Right.
Does the hand flapping things.
Yep.
And then if anybody touches them, gets angry and goes into a fit.
Sensory overload.
But that's not true. The thing is, that's not always true.
So is it a personal space thing?
No. Actually, there are actually many autistic kids that I have, autistic kids and autistic adults, that are quite loving, mm-hmm. quite physical with other people, mm-hmm. have no problems being touched by other people.
Right.
And don't necessarily have that characteristic behavior at that point. There are certain triggers that may trigger them.
Right.
And what's funny about that, the trigger part of things is you have things that trigger you.
Right.
Let's say you're in line at the bank, Mike.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a person in front of you in line.
Right.
And they want to deposit checks.
Okay.
But they've been standing in line like you have for a whole, 20, 30 minutes.
Right.
You don't want to be there this long.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be there this long, but they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
So they get up to the front to get ready to, they finally are in front of the teller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at that point in front of the teller that they start digging in their purse.
And pulling out their pen.
Pull out their wallet.
Yeah.
And then open it up and have to search through for their card to get set up.
Right.
Have to search through for the checks they want to deposit. Because
they could have done all that in line.
They could have had it all waiting in their hand doing it. And what's your reaction?
You get annoyed at it.
You get annoyed. Sometimes you get really annoyed. You're like, why the stupid idiot?
Why the hell didn't you?
Person,
yeah.
Why didn't you?
Why the hell didn't you do that while you were waiting, dude?
But why don't you do anything?
Because it's not worth losing your mind over.
Okay.
It's not worth causing a scene.
You have the ability, because of the things that you've learned, because of the things that you've been able to have wired into your brain, you have the ability to...
service to the situation by reacting in such a way.
You have the ability to have filters in front of your...
Right.
Now, let's say the same scenario, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you were completely drunk.
Oh, I'd say something stupid. Yeah,
your filters are gone.
Yeah, I'd say something stupid.
Now, I'm not wanting to compare autism to being drunk. Please, don't. I'm not comparing that at all.
For anybody listening, don't show up at a bank drunk.
Yes, don't do that either. That would be bad. But you can make the comparison in that with many autistic individuals,
mm-hmm.
Part of this thing where they have the difficulties with social communication and interaction,
mm-hmm.
that specifically, it's a very funny phrase, difficulties with social communication and interaction. This is to imply that there are specific things that you should do as part of social communication interaction with people,
mm-hmm.
not talking over somebody, listening to what somebody else has said,
right.
responding to them, keeping safe personal distance, especially right now, 6 feet people. you know what I'm saying? Personal space between people.
I like
people.
This ominous. We mention it and then we move on and then it's still there.
Okay, hey, that's kind of how it is.
Yeah.
It's mentioned, we move on, it's still there.
Yeah.
But all these social niceties, right? All these rules and theater that's put in place when it comes to dealing with other people. We've had to learn all of this. We've had to assimilate all this. We've had to make all part reading the body language of the other person, mm-hmm. to be a part of it. We've had to either we've worked at assimilating this, or it's just happened organically that we've learned it through our experiences and interactions with people.
Right.
Those are part of pathways in the brain.
Yeah.
These are the pathways that oftentimes autistic people have the most trouble with. This is for the most part almost across the board throughout the whole spectrum. They have trouble in some way or another with this social interaction portion.
Right.
And if you think about it, they don't follow the theater. They don't follow the ritual. They don't follow the. They don't have the filters to stop them from just doing exactly what they think.
Right.
So, for instance, if one of their triggers, like for me, a trigger is people that aren't prepared. That's why I use this bank example.
Right. Totally. Makes
That's
sense.
A total trigger for me. You're there to do it. Be prepared with your stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. With me, that trigger makes me angry, but I don't do anything.
Right.
With somebody who doesn't understand the social niceties, mm-hmm. the theater of dealing with people, and doesn't have those filters to stop this from happening,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have the reaction of the thing that triggers them.
Right.
That reaction is just going to come full force. So if their trigger is somebody who's not prepared when they need to go do something,
right.
they're going to respond with whatever angry thought that you were that you may have that you kind of tamp down or you get out later in video games when you're playing Grand Theft Auto and you're shooting up a convenience store or whatever.
right.
They're going to get that out right then and right there because the filters aren't necessarily there. Again, right. not true for all, but true for many.
Right.
And that's where it comes in is understanding that it's not just them reacting out of anger. It's not just them being distant from people.
Right.
It's the brain not being wired in such a way that they understand this elaborate social interplay that we have.
Right.
And basically living more a life of self-preservation and self-attention type thing. It's, okay. It's like it's almost a self-focus in many ways. Even though outside things do are typically what trigger them.
Yeah.
It's much more of a self-focus type mentality, at least, again, from my experience. We're going to take a break here.
Yeah.
Okay. When we come back, I want to talk about a hot button issue, which is the, again, the idea that at this point, there is no known cause of autism. There are some theories.
Right.
That are decent theories. And then there's a theory that's completely and utterly freaking wrong.
Right.
And certain celebrities need to shut their mouth about it because it's not true. And you're putting people at even more risk, which is very relevant right now.
Dude, yeah.
And then again, a little bit more anecdotal information about my experience with experiences with autism.
Cool.
So we'll be back in just a minute.
All right. Hey, friends. This is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back with our autism talk.
Yes.
I'm going to address the big thing right now, okay?
Okay.
Biggest one being causes of autism. At this point, many studies are being done. In fact, at UC Davis College here in California,
yeah,
at their Mind Institute, they've been doing a lot of studies for the last 12, 13 years.
Wow.
Trying to find any kind of causes for autism.
Mm-hmm.
The leading theory at this point among most reputable scientists.
Reputable scientists.
That are not celebrities is that there is a genetic component to it. That oh, okay. there's some kind of a genetic combination that creates, I wouldn't say creates, but causes autism. They are still working to find, I mean, genetic mapping is a big deal, but it's mm-hmm. also a long-term project. It's not something that's going to happen quickly because there's a lot of damn information in DNA. So for them to get all the information and what each little piece of it does and can, how it can affect the human body is still going to take a lot of time.
Right.
But at this point, I can say I know of at least one family where three of the children in the family are all autistic. Same set of parents. Kind of makes you think there's a genetic component involved.
Huh.
Just saying.
Right.
That seems pretty easy for me to see. Admittedly, it's only one family that I know, but that tells me a lot personally.
Right.
It is not in any way, shape, or form caused by vaccines.
Of course.
Now, vaccines given in the first, the reason vaccines were brought up as a possible cause, there's always the fear of medical professionals doing things that people are not smart enough to understand themselves.
Therefore, they must be bad.
In fact, I even saw somebody that was railing against how vaccines was anti-vaxxer parent that was railing against vaccines. Says, why can't we just find a dead version of the virus and inject that into a kid to build up the immunities for them.
That's so we literally don't have to what use a vaccine is.
That yeah, exactly. That's exactly what a vaccine is. This person was so uninformed that they didn't know what a vaccine actually was. All they thought was the kid was being injected with mercury. First of all, it's not actually mercury that is used.
It's a kill-all.
It is a chemical called thimerosal.
Thimerosal. So it's not mercury.
It's not.
It is a mercury-based compound,
yes,
I'm assuming?
Yes, it's a mercury-based compound.
Okay,
but it's not
pure freaking mercury. It's not like you're taking a thermometer, sticking it in a syringe, and then injecting it.
Actually, if you eat fish that's fresh water in any way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. you're probably getting more mercury from that single piece of fish that you eat than you're getting from the vaccines.
Now,
that being said,
the body does not process mercury in a very I do know this, especially I've known people that have had to go home from work because of mercury poisoning.
Yeah.
There was somebody I knew who was like super, super into fitness. It was a coworker of mine.
Yeah.
And she ended up having to go home because she didn't eat red meat. And she didn't eat white meat. She ate fish as her protein source.
If you eat too much fish as a protein source, you do have to worry about
that. She had been eating fish her whole life, and she was like 25 before she ended up having mercury poisoning.
Yes. It can accumulate.
It accumulates over a very long period of time.
With any metals that you ingest, and there are many metals that you can ingest.
Yes.
They're all toxic if you have too much of it in your system.
Of course.
Regardless, lithium, actually a very popular drug used for bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Lithium is a metal, people. It is a metal. And so if you are taking lithium for any bipolar stuff or any purposes whatsoever, mm-hmm. you actually need to have your levels tested in your blood regularly. Mm-hmm. Because if you get lithium poisoning, it can basically shut your brain down. It's no joke.
Oh, boy. Isn't lithium used for like...
Isn't that used for depression or something?
It's
an antipsychotic, bipolar disorder, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So you need to have your levels checked regularly because, again, I know somebody who was taking lithium and their levels weren't checked and they got to a toxicity level.
Oh, that's terrible.
And it actually caused some physical ailments for them.
And
it was because they went in and got checked for the physical ailments, was asked about their medication, that somebody was like, oh, wait, we should check your lithium toxicity level. Oh, crap, it's pretty high. We need to get you off of lithium because this could kill you.
Damn.
So, any metals in large enough quantities are going to do that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Even iron, which is necessary for our blood, if you have too much iron, it will make you sick.
Right.
So you do need to have regulation of it. However, the amount that's in vaccines, nowhere near a deadly amount. But because
out of curiosity, why do they put them in there?
It's part of the agent that helps to deliver the virus and the dead viruses into the bloodstream and hold
it in
the
bloodstream. What it does is the virus. I'm being assumptive here. Most likely, it would be that the virus attaches itself to those compounds, and those compounds are distributed through the bloodstream.
I can't say exactly, but I know that it's necessary for it
because there's always some
coming
like,
through.
This is always like a lot of people don't necessarily realize that a lot of this practice, scientific practice in general, is a consistent theoretical practice.
Yes.
So when it comes down to the medical field as well, the consistencies have been found, but it's always considered as a theory. Well, so the way that and it has been proven to work in many cases, but it doesn't mean it's a full fact. I will interrupt you for a second. Yeah. I apologize for interrupting, but I will say this. That does not mean that this stuff is not sound advice. It does not mean that the medical practice itself is invalid. I want to clarify my statement.
Okay.
So, that does not mean the practice is invalid. That means that pretty much everything is an exercise in theory when you really think about it. And the fact that certain things have been continually proven to be more and more true as they go along means it's a lot easier to actually depend on those things as reliable information.
Certain vaccines, polio's gone. Polio's basically gone. At least in the developed world, polio is gone because of the polio vaccines. Smallpox is basically gone because of vaccines. Involved.
Right. I'm just explaining myself.
Up until recently, measles, mumps, and rubella were basically gone in the modern world. Notice I say up until recently. Because the most...
people stopped vaccinating their damn kids.
Let me get there.
Sorry.
The most common vaccine that was being cited as being a problem for the autism thing that was being said this vaccine causes autism was the MMR shot, the measles, mumps, and rubella shot. Now, the reason for this is this. The reason for this is this, twofold. Reason number one, this shot came out, or this shot comes to a child, the kid goes and gets this shot at about the age of 1.5 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
which is the time where you start seeing the delays in hitting the milestones, the developmentary milestones.
Right.
So this is the time when you will start seeing. And what happens is, I didn't explain it entirely well enough in the first half, you'll see normal, oftentimes with autistic children, you'll see normal milestones hit this milestone, perfect, hit this milestone, perfect, hit this milestone, perfect.
Right.
And suddenly, boom, no more milestones hit.
Right.
And what people see is, especially if it happens around the time of the shot, the shot happens, suddenly my kid isn't hitting these milestones anymore. Cause and effect. It's not necessarily true,
like,
but this is how people see it.
Right. They're
but
looking
this,
at, but they're this but got, correlation well, is not causation.
It's not. Thank you, Matrix.
Yeah.
The,
but no,
the,
it's a
the Merovingian says that in the Matrix.
Oh, I didn't realize that. No, it's just something that it's something well, that is that's a common phrase.
Well,
in the scientific community
in 1998, a doctor in the UK named Andrew Wakefield, he published an article in the Lancet, Lancet's a medical journal, okay, that linked autism to the MMR vaccine. He said it was a clear link. And that chemical was the linking chemical, clear link of the MMR vaccine to
and this is
of
where
the current
it starts.
Vaccine. This causes hysteria. People stop vaccinating their kids. And if you look, it was around the end of the 90s, beginning of the aughts, that the anti-vaxxer movement really caught steam.
No, that's when it kicked in.
And
so a lot of these, it's funny because a lot of these millennial kids are like 10 years younger than me.
And
I develop.
Well,
a lot of
you see,
issues.
you saw a rise in measles and
physical
mumps.
Physical issues specifically, yes.
Yeah, measles and mumps became huge, and there were deaths and serious injury as a result of this.
Yeah.
So when this came out, this is a big deal. The CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Institute of Medicine of U.S. National Health Service, and a few other major medical organizations decided to do some huge studies. Review this guy's study. See what the heck was going on.
Yeah, peer
here.
Review.
Well, guess what?
Essentially.
Guess what?
Well, they found no link.
Absolutely no link.
Of course
Moreover,
not.
Moreover, at the time, it was rumored that Dr. Andrew Wakefield was developing his own version of the MMR vaccine, and it was theorized
he was
that
not trying to market an alternate vaccine to make money.
It was theorized that he was bashing the original and trying to demonize the original vaccine to be able to possibly sell.
You're
his
telling
own.
Me theorized, this is a Coke versus Pepsi thing?
Theorized. However, I have good news for you. I do have good news for you. And journalist Brian Deer, he investigated Wakefield after all of this because he was trying to find out what the heck is going on. Where did this information come from? He found multiple conflicts of interest, the vaccines he was trying
to
produce.
Right.
He had also found manipulated evidence and broken ethical codes within his entire study. So
basically he exposed the guy as a complete fraud.
In 2004, The Lancet removed a portion of the article from their magazines, from their web pages, their stuff it was.
Oh, the damage was already done. It took 6 years?
Well, in 2010, they retracted the entire article, the entire paper. But here's at least the good news as far as this guy.
Did it take
getting
6 years for that investigation to go through?
That I am unsure of. But
I'm curious. I'm curious how long, because as long as that was there,
it was still
the
disinformation.
The fact that it was a sales thing.
Yeah,
it was that's the part that pisses me off. That's the part that's total horseshit. Yeah. Like I knew that this was a fact. I knew that this had happened, but I didn't know the process or what had happened or why. I heard that the doctor who had come out with the article had stated eventually, oh, no, that was a lie. It was manipulated information because somebody paid me to do that.
Yeah.
But that's what I heard.
Yeah.
Not I was trying to sell an alternative product and therefore
either,
damaged
well, either
and caused
he was,
a major
Either
issue.
He was or the people who paid him were. Regardless, somebody was trying to sell a different product.
Yeah, that's beside the point. I didn't know he was trying to sell it.
Do you want to hear some good news, at least?
What's that?
Also in 2010.
That guy go to jail?
He was found guilty of serious medical conduct by the General Medical Council in May of 2010.
Yeah.
And was struck from the medical register in the UK. Not allowed to practice medicine anymore in the UK.
That bastard should have been arrested for manslaughter.
Should have been arrested possibly for a lot of different things. But
I mean, fraud,
funny,
all that kind of bullshit. But that is, sorry, that pisses me off.
What's funny about that, what's funny about the whole thing is that you still have these celebrities who still are on the anti-vax kick who still believe
Unfortunately, yes. But that's the thing. That's how dangerous. When you attack the medical field,
yeah,
that is how dangerous this is. And most of the stuff, when you're looking at attacking the medical field, if I may soapbox for a minute.
Go ahead. Soapbox away, sir.
If you are attacking the medical field because of X personal agenda without any true proven information, and I'm talking on any level. Yeah. I'm talking like people that are sharing shitty medical information because it's on a graphic that you share on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay? If you're sharing memes that are contradictory to what is official discovered information, especially at a sensitive time like what's going on right now, we're trying to discover information.
We're trying to get ourselves through
something. You are not
just
part of the problem. You are killing people. You are doing some serious damage.
You could be putting a lot of people at risk by putting forth this kind of false information.
So that level, like, yes, it's at varying different levels. And many people are trying to do... There's this culture right now where people are trying to manipulate factual information in order to fit in with their narrative.
Yeah.
You are going about it completely backwards. You need to change your narrative based on the facts. I actually had this rant about this morning. I was talking to my wife about it.
Actually, funny enough, I was talking to your wife also a little while ago.
Yeah.
And we had talked last week about this current crisis, and she had given me some information that I couldn't find and corroborate. So her and I had a little bit of a back and forth on it.
Right.
And it wasn't until after I had left for the day that day that I was a couple of days afterwards that I finally found the same information that she had gotten.
Yeah.
She had found it in kind of a hard to find place. I finally saw it on official information.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, okay, she had this information. She just got it in a different place. But I wasn't even your wife, somebody who I do trust and who I have had, I've known for a long time, had a long friendship with. Even her, she doesn't have the factual information to kind of point out to me and give to me.
Yeah.
I'm still going to take that with a grain of salt until I see it from a source that I trust, because there's so many of those not a source that I trust. That's the wrong way to say it. A source that is a verified expert source.
Yeah.
In this case, it was when I finally saw it on the CDC website, because at least CDC I know is going to try to be given the real information about things.
Right, for sure.
And that's the kind of thing that, you know, you need to be seeking the correct facts. You need to be seeking the correct information, because if you're not, the harm that you can cause, not only physically, but psychologically.
Right.
And this is one of the things I want to touch on when it comes to the vaccine thing and the anti-vaxxers, that especially the ones that their biggest reason for not wanting to vaccinate their kids is because they don't want their kids to become autistic.
Right.
I know a family. To say that you'd rather run the risk of your kids dying of measles and mumps and infecting other people with measles and mumps, possibly injuring or killing them, you'd rather risk death for these children and me and possibly others than have your kid be autistic?
Yeah.
That's just a horrible, terrible thing to say in a world with autistic people.
Hasn't been proven.
That's making them be – that's putting them on a level of less than human.
That's pretty terrible.
I'm sorry.
Because you're thinking of them as something you own rather than...
Well, no, it's not even...
Rather than being their own human being.
You're not seeing my mind frame here.
Okay.
What it's saying is, let's say I'm that parent, right?
Right.
Saying, well, shoot, I'd rather my kid run the risk of dying of measles than be autistic. That's what you're saying.
That is what you're saying.
That's exactly what you're saying. And what does that say to the autistic people?
Yeah, this is another thing, if I may continue, because this is a compounded issue.
Yeah.
These opinions and what I had said earlier about the formation of verified information around your narrative type culture that has been festering in the social media landscape for ages now.
Yeah.
It pretty much ever since it freaking started. I was seeing this shit on MySpace, okay?
Yeah.
It got real bad on Facebook, but I was seeing it way back in the day too. Now, one of the biggest issues that I see with it is that the worst offenders are the ones that make a claim on something and then do not back it up with information or something that they cite. People make claims, they get challenged on it, and then they tell somebody else to Google the information.
Yeah,
that's bullshit, because you should be able to cite exactly
claim,
where you came. Yeah,
if you make the claim, you have the burden of proof.
Yeah, that means you need to Google it.
Yeah.
You need to show them you carry that burden of proof.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, if you are incapable of doing that, don't make the damn claim, or at least apologize for making a false claim.
Actually, funny enough,
that's
in that
the easiest thing that you could do.
Funny enough, in that, that's what I do whenever I make it. Whenever I am like in a conversation and jokingly make a false claim.
Yeah.
Like, dude, did you know? Did you know that like Kurt Russell, he owns like 5 million horses. Seriously, bro, Google it. That's when I'll use it.
Yeah.
Just because I'm purposely.
It's
because I'm
purposely, but you're mocking those
joke.
Types of. Yeah, you're mocking those people, mocking and you're that. Making it. Yeah, but yeah. The that's where I find a major issue, because the problem is that X friend who said X thing on X website, is spreading it to another friend of theirs that already thinks that that's the case.
Yeah.
And because they've accepted a a narrative as a fact.
Yeah.
Because X friend said it, like that's where, and I'm calling people out. Like I've got people messaging me, COVID-19 memes right now. Oh, if you only feel this and you've got this, then you're probably going to be fine and you can go out. Shut up. The first thing
is bringing it back into the coronavirus thing.
Well, this kind of tends to corroborate with this because
in the sense of misinformation and misunderstanding of the situation.
I know that's this episode wasn't initially about this, but I understand tackling this is very important.
I can tie it in even further in the sense that when you're dealing with autistic individuals, you need to understand that, first of all, they're people. Autism is a label we're trying to put on them to help us understand them better, because it's our lack of understanding as neurotypical people.
Yes.
It's our lack of understanding.
Neurotypical. I like that term.
That's actually the acceptable and proper term
to
use.
Completely understandable.
We don't understand as neurotypical people what exactly the world is in their perception.
Right.
And we're trying to place our own system of rules and laws and values on how the world should be interpreted.
Right.
And the thing is, you can't expect that any other person is going to have your same rules and laws and values of interpreting the world.
Right.
And yet we're still trying to do that in the sense. So what we have to do is, if we're cognizant of this, because we can at least say, I'm cognizant of the fact as a neurotypical person.
Right.
I can understand the fact that I don't understand what's going on in their interpretation of the world. Mm-hmm. I can't see the world through their eyes. So I have to be the one dealing with them, working with them, trying to communicate with them, whatever. I have to be the one that's able to bend my understanding of things, mm-hmm. to bend my rules, to make the concessions needed to try to make it approachable for them, because they don't show the ability to do that.
Right.
This is what we as people are being asked to do, especially in the United States, but also in many other countries, and especially here in California.
Yeah.
We're being asked to be the ones to bend right now, bend our way of looking at the world, our way of wanting to access the world, bend just a little to try to help mitigate this problem. We should be, if we can read the shelter in place, you know, rules, the shelter in place initiatives, we should be the ones to be able to bend, change our lives just that little bit that's necessary, mm-hmm. to try to make this something that's easier to work through. Mm-hmm. We have that capability, knowing that we're not, we can't just be thinking about ourselves and our interpretation and whatnot. We have to be thinking as a whole of all those other people that could be infected, that could be hurt by this, that could have these issues, that just because your experience with it is one experience doesn't mean that's everybody's, and we should be worried about what everybody's experience is and or could be.
Right.
And that's why we should be trying to get the right information, follow the right information for the betterment of all. So I see the way that it ties in. You know, I mean, admittedly,
right.
I'm a very independent person that I don't want anybody telling me when I can and can't leave my home.
Right.
I don't want to do that. But again, my experience with working with autistic individuals has taught me that sometimes I have to be the one to bend. I have to be the one to change what my expectations are, what my approach is, to bend to what is for the better approach for more people involved. Not just for myself, but sometimes mm-hmm. for others.
Yes.
Oftentimes, more often for others. And that's kind of the, again, that's the it ties in real well with what I'm trying to get to when it comes to dealing with autism. Is it has all of these issues. It has all these things that us neurotypical people will see as problematic things.
Yeah.
I mean, you just trying to conceptualize what the sensory overload might be for an autistic person, just kind of, it can be frightening.
It is.
But understand that they are as much human as we are, because we're all human together. We all were made with a sperm and an egg, and we all resided in a uterus at some point or another, and either exited through a cut in the stomach or a vagina.
Yeah.
One of the two happened. We've all had that experience.
Yes.
And this is something that, especially if they are able to finally prove it's a genetic component, this is something that somebody is born with, just like they're born with red hair and no soul. Or if they're born with various pigmentations of skin, these are all genetic things that we don't have a choice over.
Right.
We don't have a choice over what we are born with. And I will say that has to do with what we are born with is our mental image of ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
Our mental image may not necessarily line up with what we were physically born with, but the thing is, your mind is oftentimes much more powerful than what your body is. So again, that's something we still can be born with,
yeah,
and be a part of. I don't want to get into the realm of saying that people can't be born thinking they are different than what their physical appearance may show them to be.
Yeah.
So it's all in your perception of yourself and your ability to perceive yourself. But that's just it. We need to be able to understand that our perception of reality isn't necessarily the same as the person sitting right across from us. And when you are working with any person, any other person, realize the world can be a lot easier if you can see the world through their eyes. If you can understand what their viewpoint of the world is,
mm-hmm,
you can get to a point of connection with them. Connection that, especially with autistic individuals, people think you can't connect with many of them because they don't make the eye contact with people. They don't communicate with people. Again, some don't like to be touched.
Mm-hmm.
That's true for some people, but there are some people that are just that way. I mean, yeah. I have family members that are, male family members that are still cut from that old cloth of, men don't talk about their emotions. They don't deal with those kinds of things. They don't get into deep subjects about stuff because that's just what men don't talk about.
Right.
That person's just as approachable as maybe what people view an autistic person to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just as emotionally approachable.
Yeah.
The autistic people that I have worked with, the kids that I've worked with, hugs, kisses, not right now, 6 feet of space between people, but hugs, kisses, laying all over people, the same stuff that you see kids do on a regular basis with their friends and family that they know,
mm-hmm,
making jokes back and forth with people.
Yeah.
It's not something that's a death sentence at all in any way, shape, or form.
No.
In many ways, it's just another way of us trying to understand the people that we know. And I don't know if I hit all the things I wanted to with this autism talk. I just want people to be more aware, ask more questions, learn more things, find out more about autistic people. Realize that just because you see one autistic person do something doesn't mean, all autistic people do that.
Right.
I mean, seriously. How many African-American people do you know that don't play basketball? Because I know a lot. Most of the African-American people I know are too short to play basketball, just like me.
Right.
It's not like, you're African-American. You must be really good at sports. No. You know what I mean? I would have said
tall people.
Yeah, well, tall. I'm literally going to the fact that there are people that view autistic people as a completely separate entity, like they do racial divides.
No, I see. Way. Yeah,
and just because and there are those people that are those kind of close minded people that, because they know one person that's African American and does these things, mm-hmm, then okay, every African American does these things.
Right.
When there's no truth whatsoever. I know this one guy from from Thailand, and he eats these things and he does these things. I guess all Thai people do that. No, not necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I mean, and so that's, I think I've shared the story before. I had a friend that I worked at Home Depot with years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to look at him and you were to ask him, his family was originally from India.
Oh.
Originally.
Mm-hmm.
He did not grow up in India.
Oh, where'd he grow?
He grew up in London.
Oh, so he's British, essentially.
He's a British citizen. And in fact, he had dual citizenship when he was here. He had British and American citizenship.
Cool.
He was just British. He was here on a visa.
Ah.
But he was British,
mm-hmm,
and spoke with a super, super thick Cockney accent.
Yeah.
Like super thick.
Nice.
And so he identified himself as British. Yes. His cultural aspects were very much from India still.
Yeah.
But he identified himself as being British. He was
right.
a Brit.
Right.
In fact, I think I've said the story before, but if not, it's still a funny story. Every time we come around 4th of July,
mm-hmm.
I would be yelling at him in the store at Home Depot. Like, hey, get back to your own country, which is hilarious for somebody who looks like they're from India. A white guy telling a guy that looks like he's from
right,
India to get back to his own country.
But then you realize that it's a British
well, when,
jab,
when I was, when
not
I was
an
asked,
Indian jab.
Yeah, when I was asked about it, I'm like, he's British. Well, no, he's Indian. No, ask him. He goes, yeah, I don't even want to attempt his accent because
yeah.
he's so thick. I mean, I can do a few British accents, but his was like, I would have to have him repeat stuff sometimes because it was such a thick Cockney accent.
That's awesome.
Full on Cockney. You could see this guy like loading up a lorry in an alleyway by the Thames. I mean, seriously, hardcore Cockney accent. And he would just reply back in the accent. Oh, no, we let you win that war. We let you win that thing.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
we
great.
Just we were tired of pay, we were tired of paying for you guys, and it was just it was so fun to go back and forth. Again, judging by the you know, just because he looked the way he did doesn't mean that he was what he was.
Right,
you have to look deeper. And with autistic individuals, with any person with special needs,
mm-hmm.
look deeper. There is much more to the person than what you think there is from all of your preconceived notions of them.
Absolutely.
There are some things that still fit and still make sense.
Yeah.
But that doesn't give you the whole picture of them. And I can say my experiences have made me, I think, a much better person. They made me more able to look at things from various points of view. My favorite thing I want to share, just to give you an idea of how the point of view might be different, but at the same time, it might even be something that makes more sense than what our normal point of view is. If I were to ask you, Mike, if I were to ask you to get me some cheese salt, what would you give me?
Excuse me, what?
If I said I wanted cheese salt, what would you give me?
You know what? Because the wheels are turning and I know yeah. I have to think outside the box, the first thing I'm thinking is Parmesan.
You are correct.
That makes
sense. By the way, you're one of only two people that have ever got that right on the first time me asking.
Wow.
And I've asked this of people that are educators, people
right.
that have worked with special needs individuals
right.
as part of their job. I've asked this question because this is probably one of the most poignant ones to me. If you think about cheese salt being Parmesan cheese, the way that we eat Parmesan cheese, not really good Parmesan cheese where you get like the big wedge of Parm
right,
and somebody shreds it for you or slices it for you.
No, but I'm
talking about
the bottle.
The craft bottle
yeah,
of Parmesan cheese.
I've got some.
You had some earlier
yeah,
which is why
lunch.
It clicked in my head. I'm going to ask him this question.
That's great.
If you think about it, you sprinkle it out like salt.
Yeah.
It's got a salty flavor to it, but it's cheese.
Yeah.
And this was an autistic boy's kind of rendition of asking for. Interestingly, he ate the cheese salt just by itself, the Parmesan cheese just by itself with a spoon, which is a little weird. But hey, I mean, I'll eat a whole block of sharp cheddar by myself if I'm given the opportunity to, like literally in one sitting. It's an awful thing to watch.
I'm down with that. If I got some crackers,
it's about the same crackers. Thing. It's about the same thing as watching me drink a half a gallon of milk in less than 20 minutes.
That was so weird.
I'll do a similar thing to like an 8 ounce block of cheese. I will eat an 8 ounce block of cheese in like 30 minutes. It's
good
terrifying
Lord.
To watch. But anyway, point being, it's just a slightly different view of the world.
Right.
And if we can embrace that more, if we can get more understanding of it, hey, maybe we can all be better people as a result.
I like that.
So this is one that if anybody has any specific questions about autism, please feel free to ask. I'll do the best that I can to answer from my personal experiences.
Wonderful.
With it. And my experiences are fairly vast. I think I've had about as much experience as any non-professional person in special education
mm-hmm.
could probably have with autistic individuals.
Cool.
So, Mike, where are people going to be listening to us?
Well, you can listen to us at the ZenioChronicles.com or ZenCron.com. That's spelled XenCHRON. Look for that tag on Facebook and Twitter as well. We are at ZenCron on both of those websites. You could also find us, as far as the podcast itself, is on Spotify and Google Play or Google Podcasts,
yep.
excuse me, and Apple Podcasts and all the major places.
Yeah.
Tune in as well. On one of those,
I do want to mention either Spotify or Google.
Uh-huh.
You can actually find the same thing you can find on our YouTube site, which is all of our podcasts. Yes.
What?
I'm not sure which one it's on, but it's on one of those that you can find all of
our
podcasts.
I've been lying the whole time.
You were just misinformed.
I apologize for that. That's great. I'm going to have to verify it. I'll make sure next time we find out.
I'm not sure which one it is, but it's on one of them.
That may be the case with all of them. But we also have a YouTube page.
Yes, the YouTube page.
So please go ahead and if you're listening to this on YouTube, throw a like on the video. Comment on it as well. Click the bell that you're notified. But you have to subscribe first.
Subscribe.
Then click the bell.
Subscribe, then click the bell.
Yes. And you'll be notified the next podcast we put out. Yes. And, you know, when we don't put out a podcast, normally we'll put out some kind of a video explaining what happened.
Yes, you actually get to see one of our ugly mugs when we don't put out a podcast. Not sure which one it's going to be. I mean, last time it was you, so
last
I guess
time
it's
it was
my
just
turn.
Me. Yeah, it may be your turn.
It might be my turn at this point. I don't know if I want to do an attempt to pretend that I'm Mike. That might not go off well. He might not like that.
Oh, I would be very entertained, sir.
I probably would just wear like a t-shirt and then make sure I have like a piece of paper like taped to the t-shirt that says soulless. Just because.
Hey, that's perfect.
People need to research that to find out how it's funny. And if you don't know, then stop listening.
Go watch the other video. You'll find out why.
Yes. All right. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back next week.
Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.